around them as Poe took them through the devastation, the fighter's shields warding off whatever he could not directly avoid. Unable to restrain himself, the trooper let out a yell that echoed around the cockpit. Yes! Did you see that? Poe whipped the TIE fighter around to the side of the finalizer. Told you you could do it. What's your name? FN-2187. FN-what? That's the only name they ever gave me. The longing in the trooper's voice was all too human. That, and something more. Something that had driven him, among his hundreds, his thousands of colleagues, to step outside the comfort zone of training and regimentation. Something that had ignited some exceptional spark of individualism within him. Poe knew that spark was present in the man behind him, and he now made it his task to see that it did not fade away. But where to start? If that's the name they gave you, then I ain't using it. FN, huh? I'm calling you Finn. That all right with you? Behind him, the trooper considered. A delighted smile spread slowly across his face. Yeah. Finn. I like that. But now you're one up on me. Sorry? I don't know your name. If you tell me it's RS-736 or something like that, I'm gonna be seriously confused. The pilot had to laugh. I'm Poe. Poe Dameron. Good to meet you, Poe. Good to meet you, Finn.
Settling on a line of attack, he prepared to dive once more into the heart of the Star Destroyer.
A bug attacking a Bantha. But it was a bug with a very nasty bite.
On the main bridge of the finalizer, General Hux peered over the shoulder of Lieutenant Maitaka. While there could be no single central command station on a vessel as enormous as the Star Destroyer, Maitaka's console approximated such a position as effectively as anything could. Hux could hardly believe what he had been told. Not only had the prisoner escaped, he had managed to find his way to an operational hangar, slip aboard an outfitted and ready-to-fly fighter, and blast his way free. And not just any fighter, but a Special Forces TIE fighter. If the proof had not been right in front of him, making a treacherous nuisance of itself as the ship's perceptors strove to keep track of the stolen fighter, Hux would not have believed such a thing possible. A very slight shudder ran through the deck. Maitaka's voice was even, but Hux could tell that the dark-haired lieutenant was shaken by what he was seeing.
They've taken out an entire bank of defensive weaponry, and they continue to attack. They're not running.
Hux didn't understand. It was beyond comprehension. Prisoners ran from prisons. They didn't stick around to assault their jailers. The action smacked of an unshakable wish to commit suicide. What he knew of the escaped prisoner strongly suggested a desire to live. What had happened to change him? Or, Hux thought, was the profile that had been drawn up by the Psytechs simply wrong? Formal profile or not, of one thing he was now certain. They had badly underestimated what had seemed to be a resistance pilot on the verge of physical and emotional collapse.
Engage the ventral cannons, Hux ordered. Bringing them online, Maitaka said.
No matter how close a flight path the escaped pilot took, Hux knew that sensors would prevent the guns from firing adjacent to the ship's structure itself. Exceptional pilot that he was, the escaped prisoner would know that. Probably he was counting on it, which was why he continued to fly so close to the destroyer's surface instead of bolting for empty space. Now, Hux was counting on the pilot sustaining the same strategy. The longer he remained within the destroyer's sphere of armed influence, the more forces could be brought against him, and the less chance he would have to make a second, more permanent escape. A voice sounded behind him, unmistakable, controlled, and plainly displeased.
Is it the Resistance pilot?
Hux turned to face Kylo Ren. unable to see past the metallic mask, unable to perceive eyes or mouth. One had to rely on subtle changes in voice and tone to try to descry the tall man's mood. Hux knew immediately that mood equaled, if not exceeded, his own consternation.
Yes, and he had help.
Though Hux was loath to admit it, he had no choice.
One of our own. We're checking the registers now to identify which stormtrooper it was.
While the all-concealing mask made it difficult to tell the focus of Ren's attention, it was plainly not on the general.
FN-2187.
It unnerved Hux that Kylo Ren had managed to ascertain the identity of the rogue trooper before the ship's own command staff. But then, Ren had access to a great many aspects of knowledge from which ordinary mortals like himself were excluded, Hux knew. He would have inquired further, but the taller figure had already turned and headed off. Ren's indifference was far more unsettling than would have been anything as common as a straightforward insult. Shaking off the encounter, Hux turned his attention back to the lieutenant's console.
Ventral cannons hot!
The lieutenant reported.
Fire!
Hux commanded. One detonation followed another, as the finalizer's weapon system struggled to isolate the daring TIE fighter from the debris among which it danced. Ho was constantly changing his flight path, never doing anything predictable, utilizing the destruction he and his companion had already wrought to confuse the predictors that were an integral part of the big gun's operating systems. Though more debris provided more cover, Poe knew he couldn't keep up such maneuvering forever. Ultimately, the damage he and Finn had caused would be reduced to fragments, and then to powder by the efforts of the destroyer's weapons. Bereft of anywhere to hide, the TIE fighter would eventually catch a powerful laser pulse. That would be the end of the game. Before that happened, they had to get clear. No doubt every gunner, every weapon system operator on the destroyer was just waiting for the stolen fighter to break out system preparatory to making a jump to light speed. Their attention would be focused in those directions, away from the ship and toward the great darkness. The last thing they would expect someone escaping from the vicinity of the planet of Jakku to do would be to head for Jakku. As he sent the TIE fighter roaring toward the desert world below, a hand reached forward and down to wrap him on the shoulder.
Wait, this isn't right. Where are you going?
Behind them, a few desultory blasts erupted from the Star Destroyer's weapons. It would take very little time for the great ship to bring all its power to bear on the fleeing fighter. But very little time was all a pilot like Poe needed.
You mean, where are we going?
Back to Jakku, that's where.
As if, he thought, the brown and yellow globe expanding rapidly in front of them wasn't indication enough. But he could sympathize with Finn's confusion. What they were doing made no sense. Always, he knew, the best way to avoid predictability. Even if it was a little mad.
What? Jakku? No, Poe, we gotta get out of this system!
The TIE fighter rocked crazily as one near miss after another reached them from the destroyer, and Poe fought to confuse any automatic trackers. Finn's voice grew calmer, but only slightly.
Oh, okay, I got it. We're gonna go sub-atmosphere, circle the planet, and strike for light speed on the other side, out of the big guy's range, right? Right? Tell me I'm right, Poe.
Poe didn't bother to shake his head, focusing on the fighter's wonderfully responsive controls.
I gotta get my droid before the First Order does.
Finn gaped at the back of the pilot's head.
Your droid? What does a droid have to do with escaping?
It's not about escaping. This whole business isn't about escaping.
Could have fooled me!
Feeling slightly numb, Finn slumped back in his seat.
You must really, really, really like this droid.
He's a BB unit. One of a kind. Orange and white. Utterly unique and utterly invaluable.
Finn's voice rose anew.
I don't care what color it is! I don't care if it's capable of invisibility. No droid can be that important!
Poe let out a private, knowing grunt.
This one is, pal. Okay,
Finn countered.
You say that it's important? I'll tell you what's important, pal. Getting as far away from the First Order and its representatives as we can. As fast as we can. That's what's important. To me, anyway.
He lowered his voice.
I saved your life, Poe. At the very least, you owe me mine. We go back to Jakku, we die.
That's a chance we've got to take.
The pilot's stance was unshakable.
This isn't about my life or yours. I'm sorry, Finn, but there are far greater things at stake.
Forces are in motion that must be dealt with. Unfortunately, I seem to be at the center of them. It's a responsibility I can't, I won't forego. I'm sorry you've become caught up in the middle of it, but I can't do anything about that.
I don't care how important this droid of yours is, or what you and it are involved in. For you and me, Jakku is another word for death.
Poe could not dispute Finn's logic, so he ignored it. Just as he had set aside reason when he had rushed into the village in a futile attempt to save the life of Lor San Tekka. Of course, he reminded himself, that hadn't turned out so well either. But he was being nothing if not truthful. He had sworn an oath to the Resistance, and he had no intention of breaking it now, no matter how bad the odds. He took a deep breath. Although it meant breaking protocol, Finn deserved to know.
My droid's got a map that leads to Luke Skywalker.
It took Finn a moment, a long moment, for the full impact of the pilot's declaration to hit home.
You gotta be kidding me! I never should have rescued you!
Even as he spoke, a burst from the destroyer intercepted Poe's latest evasive efforts. Sparks flew within the cockpit, followed by an eruption of acrid smoke and fumes. The fighter's engines flared wildly, sending it out of control. And since it was headed straight toward the surface of Jakku, that was where it continued to race. Out of control! Finn quit looking for something to shoot at, because his instrumentation had gone completely dead.
Coughing, fighting for breath, he yelled in the pilot's direction. All weapon systems are down! My controls are neutralized! You!
There was no reply, save for the now continuous shrilling of the fighter's alarms. Finn waved at the increasingly dense smoke as he strained forward toward his new friend, and drew back in horror. Poe was not moving. His eyes were shut. Blood streamed down his face.
No! No! Poe!
No response came from the unconscious pilot. Eyeing him in the closed, smoky confines of the cockpit, his own eyes filling with tears in response to the increasingly bad air, Finn couldn't even tell if the other man was still alive. The blackness of space was gone now, completely blotted out by the increasingly proximate surface of Jakku. Even if he could somehow take Poe's place, Finn knew he could not safely set down an undamaged fighter, much less one in this condition. He did, however, figure out the location of his seat's eject control. Equipped with a manual override in the event of total electronics failure, it was clearly marked. Gripping the handle, he wrenched on it as hard as he could. Neither the extra muscle nor additional adrenaline was necessary. The handle moved smoothly and without resistance. A moment later, he felt his body being ripped away from the TIE fighter. The universe spun wildly around him, and for a brief moment, his sight was filled with alternating visions of yellow planet, black space, and white clouds. Then, he passed out. On the Finalizer command deck, General Hux had moved away from Mytaka's station. Wandering from console to console, he proceeded to question a succession of technicians and fire control officers. The anxiety that had been building in him, but which he had managed to keep restrained, was greatly lightened when one tech looked up at him to report.
"They've been hit."
Hux's expression did not change, but inside he felt considerable relief. He studied the tech's console, his gaze flicking rapidly from one readout to the next. The details coming in appeared conclusive, but in this matter there was no room for mere 99% certainty. No room for analytical equivocation.
"Destroyed?"
The tech's response, as he studied his instruments, confirmed the general's circumspection.
"Disabled only, it would appear."
Hux leaned closer.
"He could be trying to throw us off."
"If so," the tech reported, "he's going to grave extremes. Sensors show pieces of the fighter are becoming detached and flying off. Such actions could not be carried out by the operator of the fighter itself, and must be the result of the craft having suffered serious damage."
He paused a moment, added,
"I hew to my original opinion, sir. No one would choose to voluntarily engage in a descent such as the one the fighter is currently taking."
"Very well, then," Hux conceded. "They are disabled, perhaps fatally so. Given that and what you can divine of their present vector, what is the projected location of touchdown?"
Once more, the technician analyzed his readouts.
"The fighter is projected to crash somewhere in the Goazon Badlands. At this range, and given the nature of the topography in question, it is impossible to predict the exact angle and velocity with which it will strike."
Hux nodded thoughtfully.
"They were going back for the droid. That's the only explanation that makes any sense. Otherwise, they would have tried to hit light speed as soon as the pilot had had enough of teasing us."
He shrugged slightly.
"It doesn't matter now. Or at least it won't once termination of this regrettable interruption is confirmed. Send a squad to the projected crash site, and instruct them to scan not only the wreckage, but the surrounding area. If they can't find bodies, then have them vac the debris. I won't accept that the pilot and the traitor are both dead until I have tangible biological proof."
His tone darkened only slightly, but it was enough to cause the tech to wish the senior officer would resume his wandering.
"Biological traces are acceptable,"
Hux murmured. "But a couple of skulls would be better." It felt to Finn as if it took him longer to escape from the confines of the encapsulated ejected gunner's seat than it had to travel from plunging fighter to planetary surface. The clips and buckles, braces and foam that were intended to set him down in one piece now seemed designed to prevent him from ever emerging onto his own two feet. There was a sequence that had to be followed. First this control, then this button, then slide this to unlock, before the gear could be convinced to let him go. Or rather, he thought frantically, to let go of him. Eventually, he succeeded in freeing himself from the tangle of safety tackle. Staggering clear, he took in his surroundings. His spirits fell. He was alive, but if the environment in which he presently found himself was anything to go by, not for long. The dusky dune field stretched in all directions, to every horizon. Somehow blue sky and sand now seemed more forbidding than the blackness of space. The warships that had largely been his home were sealed. Environmentally controlled little worlds. Anything one needed was readily available, right at hand. Food, water, entertainment, sleeping facilities, all were no more than a few steps away. It was more than a little ironic that someone comfortable in the vastness of space should suddenly find himself suffering from a touch of agoraphobia. Glancing skyward, he expected to see a landing craft or two dropping out of the clouds in hot pursuit. but his gaze was rewarded only by the sight of a pair of native avians soaring southward. They looked, he decided uncomfortably, too big to be herbivores. At least they were not circling the spot where he had landed. Or him. Yet. Something else manifested over the eastern dunes. Smoke. The wind had dropped off, allowing it to rise in a column instead of being blown sideways and dispersed. Otherwise, he would have noticed it earlier, despite his distress. Someone was making a fire in this forsaken place. Or... he started toward it, struggling in the remnants of his armor. Logic insisted no one could have survived the fighter's crash without ejecting beforehand, as he had done. But Logic also insisted that it was impossible to escape from a first-order spacecraft, and they had done that. Not that it would matter if he was found here, wandering alive among the dunes. Of one thing he was certain, his former colleagues would not understand, no matter how hard he tried to explain. No one fled the First Order and lived. The sand sucked at his feet as he stumbled toward the rising smoke.
Poe! Say something if you can hear me! Poe!
He did not expect a response, but he hoped for one. Flame had joined smoke in enveloping the wreck of the TIE fighter. Built more robustly than the typical ship of its class, the Special Forces craft had survived the crash landing, although hardly intact. Debris from the impact was scattered over a wide area. Careful not to cut himself on twisted shards of metal and still-hot composite, he pushed through the heat and haze until he reached the cockpit. It lay crushed and open to the desert air. Trying to shield his eyes against the smoke, Finn moved in closer. Something. There was something sticking out of the wreckage. An arm! Ignoring the heat and the licking flames, Finn reached in until he could get a grip on it. First one hand, then both, then pull! And it came free in his hands. No arm, no body, just Poe's jacket. Frustrated, he threw it aside and tried to enter the ruined cockpit. Increasing smoke and heat made it impossible for him to even see, much less work his way inside.
Poe!
He felt his legs start to go out from under him, but they hadn't buckled. The ground had. Looking down, he saw sand beginning to slide beneath him. His feet were already half covered. He was sinking. In front of him, the ruins of the ship began to slide into the hollow in which it had come to rest. Sand was crawling up the wings and reaching for the open cockpit. If he didn't get away from the quicksand, it was clear he was going to join the TIE fighter in premature internment. He began backpedaling frantically, yelling at the disappearing vessel.
Poe!
Going down, down into the sand to a depth that could not be imagined. Maybe just below the surface, he thought as he scrambled to find safe footing. Maybe much, much deeper. The more the sand covered the fighter, the faster the vessel sank, until in a few moments, it was completely gone. Joining it was most of the debris that the hard landing had thrown aside. There was nothing, nothing to show that... A violent explosion erupted almost beneath his feet, sending him staggering backward. For an instant, the substantial fireball that blew skyward flared an angry black and red before dissipating into the atmosphere. Regaining his footing, he stumbled forward. In place of the vanished TIE fighter, there was some scattered debris and fused sand. Nothing more. And certainly no sign of another human being. Unlike the fighter, in the case of his companion, there were no surviving fragments. Drained of energy and overwhelmed, he started kicking at the sand, as if exposing a lower layer might reveal something, anything familiar or encouraging. But each kick exposed only more sand. Looking around wildly, he saw only the silent dunes. It was as if nothing had ever touched this place,
certainly not the hand of civilization. He had escaped. He had survived. He had landed intact and apparently unharmed. And by the looks of things, he was just as dead as if none of it had ever happened.
He inhaled deeply, then screamed at the empty planet, knowing as he did so that there was no one around to hear him.
I don't know what to do!
Chapter 5. It seemed impossible that the day could grow any hotter. This being a day filled with one impossibility after another, however, Finn felt no surprise as the heat continued to intensify. Squinting into the glare, he saw nothing in front of him but sand. Sand interrupted by the occasional salt flat, followed by more sand. Nothing but sand off to his left, sand off to his right, sand behind. A shape was coming toward him, sharp outlines resolving themselves out of a distant mirage. Nor was it silent. A rising, unsteady whine accompanied the rapidly expanding vision. A vehicle! Some kind of craft out here in this blasted nothingness, and it was coming straight toward him! Staggering, he raised his arms and began yelling as loudly as his parched throat would permit.
Hey! Here! Over here! Hey!
At this point, he didn't care who was in the vehicle, not even if it was occupied by followers of the First Order. Anything, anyone, as long as they could spare some water. The speeder was large, battered, and packed with an assortment of scoundrels, representing several different species. None of them noted for their compassion. Yelling down at him and making rude gestures, they rocketed on past without so much as slowing down, leaving in their wake only dry dust and derisive laughter.
Thank you!
To the vocal sarcasm, he added a mock bow.
Oh, yes, kind fellow travelers. Thank you so very much. Thanks a lot!
He continued muttering under his breath, utilizing words and phrases from a half-dozen worlds that would have seen him busted in rank had he employed them in the presence of an officer. No need to concern himself with anything like that anymore, he knew. He was no longer a trooper in the service of the First Order. Should he ever again find himself among its adherents, the last thing he would have to worry about was censure for the use of bad language. Where was he? This wandering among and between dunes was taking him nowhere. He needed a goal, a destination. His gaze rose. To find that, he needed to acquire a more thorough view of his surroundings. There are physical tasks more daunting than climbing a steep sand dune, but few that are as frustrating. One step sliding backward for every two up, and that assuming the climber didn't lose his footing and roll all the way back down to the bottom of the sandhill. Determined to make it to the top, Finn kept fighting, legs churning, until, at last, he stood on the crest of the small, sandy mountain. His first glimpse of his surroundings was as disheartening as he had feared. More sand, piled into slightly lower dunes. But in the distance, off to his left, was that? Could it be? Yes! A settlement! What kind, he did not know, but a settlement would have water and food and shelter from the sun. If he was exceptionally lucky, it might even be the destination of the cacophonous crowd that had callously passed him in the speeder. He wouldn't mind meeting a few of those boastful travelers again. After he had refreshed himself and regained his strength, of course. He started carefully down the far side of the dune he had so painfully ascended. At least now he had a destination. He was not yet willing to allow himself any hope. The three-dimensional imagery was mundane. Standard-issued trooper personal history and training records. Nonetheless, Hux reviewed it carefully. When analyzing a psychological profile in search of an anomaly, one looked for small clues. A bit of correspondence, a favored quote, even the posture of the individual in question. Any of these might suffice to point to an explanation for the trooper's inexplicable behavior. He did not expect to find a picture of FN-2187 holding up a sign that read, "I am going to go berserk and free a prisoner and steal a TIE fighter." If there were any indications of mental imbalance or resistant sympathies in the trooper's records, Hux expected they would be subtle, not blatant. But so far, there was nothing. Nothing to suggest that FN-2187 might one day go rogue. Nothing to indicate he was anything other than a representative of his kind. No different from his comrades. Nothing to distinguish him as a person, as a soldier, as an exception. When he thought about it, Hux mused, the fact that FN-2187 came across as mind-numbingly ordinary was more unsettling than if his history had been full of semi-traitorous rants and near-psychotic episodes. It suggested that the ranks might harbor others like him. They could not be permitted to know what he had done. Psi-techs were already hard at work counseling those who had come into contact with him, whether through unremarkable everyday interaction or in the course of his violent flight. The whole incident had to be tamped down, obscured, and buried, lest the germ of an infection spread through the ranks. If there was one thing a competent fighting force did not need, Hux knew, it was unforeseen outbursts of individuality. Light from the hollows reflected off the chrome-clad figure standing beside him.
"Nothing noteworthy,"
Phasma said.
"FN-2187 was assigned to my division, received some additional specialty training, was evaluated, and sent to reconditioning."
Hux shook his head slowly as he continued to scrutinize the records. If anything stood out in the history of Stormtrooper FN-2187, it was his exceptional banality. No prior signs of nonconformity. Not so much as talking back to a superior. He appears so ordinary as to be invisible.
"This was his first offense."
Phasma betrayed nothing other than professional interest in the episode or in the man.
"It is his only offense."
Entering the room, Kylo Ren moved to join them.
"Finding the flaw in your training methods won't help recover the droid."
Although his mask concealed his facial expression, the rage simmering below his calm demeanor was almost palpable.
"And yet there are larger concerns,"
Hux insisted. It was evident from both Hux's tone and body language that he held no love for the newcomer. The feeling was mutual. Neither took pains to hide his contempt.
"Not for me."
Typical Ren, Hux thought.
Self-centered, arrogant, indifferent to the interest of others. The Supreme Leader made it explicit that the Resistance not acquire the map to Skywalker. Capture the droid if we can. Destroy it if we must.
Ren paused to consider the General's words.
"A simple enough task, or so it would seem. Find one droid. Just how capable are your soldiers, General?"
Hux turned away from the trooper's holophile. He respected Ren and his abilities, but he was not afraid of him. One did not rise to the rank of general in the forces of the First Order by showing fear.
"I won't have you questioning my methods!"
"What methods would those be, General? Those that allow a single common trooper to free an important prisoner from confinement, escort him to an operating hangar, and assist him in fighting his way to freedom? What methods teach such expertise? Obviously, at least some of your troops are skilled at high treason. Perhaps Leader Snoke should consider using an army of clones.
It was with great difficulty that Hux restrained himself. My men receive exceptional instruction. They are programmed from birth to be loyal to one another, to their officers, and to the Order. The appearance of a single abnormality does not give you the right to question methods that have been refined through long... Ren interrupted the General's impassioned defense.
Keeping the map out of the hands of the Resistance shouldn't be a problem, then. Yes.
Again, this map, which for all I know may or may not even exist. Ren's voice darkened to a degree that caused Phasma to take a step backward.
I do not think I care for your implication, General. You would be wise to keep such thoughts to yourself. You would be wise not to think them.
Hux held his ground. My duty is to fight for the First Order with every iota of information, every scrap of material, and every functioning trooper at my command. That was in the oath I took. That is the oath I have sworn to uphold. His gaze did not flinch from the mask. There was nothing in it about accommodating the ancillary interests of individuals. No matter how high their rank, or how exalted their perceived importance. Careful, Ren, that your personal interests do not interfere with direct orders from Leader Snoke. If Kylo Ren was affronted by the General's boldness, he did not show it. As if nothing untoward had passed between them, he continued.
Have you and your techs reviewed the close-in scans of the area where the stolen TIE fighter was forced down? That region is home to only one settlement of consequence, Nima Outpost. If the droid is still functioning, it would instinctively try to hide there.
Glad of the opportunity to change the subject, as well as to report something positive, Hux replied in a more amenable tone of voice.
I concur. Furthermore, we found the traitor's armor. It was strung out along a single trail in the desert, where it had been abandoned. While the viewable footprints were interspersed among the dunes, they form a consistent pattern heading toward Nima.
He smiled thinly at Ren. A strike team is already en route.
Good. I am pleased to see that you are personally in charge of this, General. Of retrieving the droid, preferably unharmed.
Before Hux could object again, Ren turned and departed back the way he had come. If he felt the hate flowing in his direction from the senior officer behind him, he chose not to respond to it. Jakku's son had burnt him, dehydrated him, and tormented him, but it had not beaten him. Not yet. What was a little sunburn, Finn told himself, to someone who had defied the First Order, freed its prisoner, and wreaked havoc on a Star Destroyer? That was what his brain said. His body begged to differ, shouting its displeasure at its recent treatment, and threatening to collapse at any moment as he finally stumbled into Nima Outpost. Old ship parts towered around him, relics of better times, heralds of space travel past. Merchants and traders eyed him speculatively. Finn carried nothing of value, save his organs, and judging by his exterior, his insides were not likely to be in very valuable condition either. Some scavengers pointed and joked, others having suffered similarly from blowing sand and grit and sun, expressed murmured sympathy. That was all the help the stranger was offered. Nima Outpost did not coddle the weak. Something flat, fat, and ugly was drinking from an open water trough. Gaping at it, Finn could not imagine what such a creature could possibly offer that would induce someone to provide it with drink. It looked neither friendly nor edible. He didn't care. It was the water he was interested in, and it was to the water he ran. cupped hands dipped, drew the dingy liquid to his mouth, and held it there for him to sip. It felt wonderful against his lips. It tasted awful going down his throat. Ugh. He spat, revolted. It was the turn of his body, however, to override his brain. Fighting down the urge to gag, he drank the unsightly lump of four-legged flesh, which he would later learn was called a hapabore, eyed him owlishly, but otherwise ignored him. For all Finn knew or cared, the squat quadruped found him equally disgusting. As Ray knelt beside BB-8, the excitable droid beeped madly.
Easy, easy. You're going to drain your cells.
She patted the curving metal flank beside her.
You're welcome for not selling you.
She saw no reason to add that she had come very, very near to doing exactly that.
Okay, stop thanking me. As to this other matter, you're going to have to calm down and speak slowly.
More frantic beeping caused her to reply irritably.
That's not sufficient information, BB-8. I can't help you if you don't tell me who you're waiting for.
The droid paused.
Thinking, she wondered.
Or, as she had warned it, running low on power? When it finally did speak again, her exasperation was palpable.
Can you trust me? What do you think?
She started to rise, frustrated and not a little angry.
Tell me or don't tell me. I don't have time for games.
The droid moved closer, bumping her gently. She made a brief show of ignoring its entreaties before bending once more.
Yes, yes, I understand. You're waiting for your master. Who? Say again?
The droid repeated the name. Poe. She shrugged diffidently.
The name means nothing to me. Should it?
Unable to properly voice his own frustration, BB-8 settled for spinning several times on his axis.
When he stopped, he began to explain.
Despite her studied indifference, Ray found herself listening closely to the steady stream of carefully composed beeps and squeals.
Yes, I know what the rebellion was. And yes, I've heard of the resistance.
Her expression grew more serious as the droid continued.
The First Order. They're horrible. Rumor has it an attack squadron of theirs destroyed a sacred village right close to here. Over near Kelvin Ravine.
BB-8's next series of beeps caused the mask of indifference to fall from her face. She stared at the spherical droid in disbelief.
You were there?
She would have queried the droid further, if not for the interruption. She recognized the approaching pair as two of Plutt's thugs. Halting, they towered over her. Twin masses of mobile meat, swathed in cheap desert clothing. Even their faces completely covered. Plutt wouldn't send such as these to deliver a polite message. With a glance at BB-8, the nearest was quick to confirm her suspicions.
Plutt wants droid. We take droid. Female, don't interfere.
The droid is mine, she shot back. I didn't sell him. Plutt knows that.
You're right,
agreed the other thug.
Plutt knows that. You didn't sell, so he take.
His companion was already pulling a sack over BB-8 when Ray moved to stop him. The other speaker grabbed her arm. Finn didn't know if the hapabore was tired of sharing his space with the biped or was simply being friendly when it pushed him over. So indistinct was the gesture that Finn couldn't tell if it was a deliberate butt or just an amiable nuzzle. Whatever the creature's motivation, it knocked him right off his feet.
This new perspective gave him an excellent view of the confrontation that had started up in the nearby marketplace.
He frowned. The young woman who was being accosted by two far larger individuals was fighting back. Rising, he impulsively moved to help her. However, the nearer he drew, the less concern he felt. Despite the difference in size between the girl and her assailants, it was looking as if she was not in need of any outside assistance. A twist and flip, and suddenly the brute who had been holding her arm found himself on the ground. When his companion rushed to assist his downed associate, he found himself on the wrong end of a ferocious assortment of kicks, punches, and blows delivered by the staff the girl was wielding. In short order, both ruffians found themselves prone and unconscious. Impressed, but still wanting to lend a hand, Finn took it upon himself to pull the half-closed sack off the property that was the apparent source of the dispute. What he saw was nothing like what he expected. From a distance, he had been unable to tell. But this close, there was no mistaking the identity of the spherical mechanical. Poe's droid! As the girl spoke to it reassuringly, it shook itself, turned its head, and saw Finn. Whereupon it twitched to one side and began beeping like someone had pulled its rationality chip. This cybernetic disputation did not unsettle Finn half as much as the expression that came over the girl's face. She ought to have been pleased by his attempt to offer assistance. Instead, he sensed, as well as saw, nothing but rising hostility.
"Hey, what's wrong? I just came over to help. Not that you needed my help."
He indicated the pair of insensible thugs.
"That doesn't mean that I wouldn't have.
Wordlessly raising the staff she carried, she came at him. He dodged, barely, and began to run, trying to find a path through the marketplace, wondering what he had done to set her off, and more than a little bewildered at the turn of events. All he had done was move to render aid. Then the droid had seen him, had said something to upset her, and now he was running. Again! As he bumped into this blaze and knocked over goods, he drew the ire of one merchant after another.
His flight finally came to an end when, after turning several corners and thinking himself in the clear, he ran into the end of that staff. It collapsed him to the ground.
Not that it took much of a blow to bring him down. He was completely drained from his trek through the desert.
Lying on his back, out of breath, and not much caring if he passed out, he looked up at her.
She held the staff over him, ready to strike again if necessary.
"What's your hurry, thief?"
Blissful unconsciousness would have to wait. So shocked was he by the unexpected accusation.
"What?"
Before he could elaborate, BB-8 rolled up fast alongside him, extended a telescoping arm, and transmitted a sizable electric shock. It was powerful enough to sit Finn bolt upright.
"Ow! Hey, what? Don't do that, woman!"
He looked up at the girl.
"Stay down or I'll have to hit you again. The jacket!"
She prodded him with the business end of her staff.
"This droid says you stole it."
Badly in need of food and clean water, Finn was forced to settle for taking a deep breath.
"Listen, I don't want to fight with you. I've already had a pretty messed up day, so I'd appreciate it if you didn't accuse me of being a
Ow!"
He glared at the droid who had zapped him a second time.
"Stop it!"
"Okay, then."
Ray was both unimpressed and unwilling to give the traveler the benefit of the doubt.
"Prove it. If you didn't steal it, how'd you get it?"
She gestured at BB-8.
"It belongs to his master."
It took Finn a long moment to process what he was hearing. As he did so, he found it meshed perfectly with what he was seeing. The girl, the agitated droid, the jacket he was wearing. They deserved an explanation. He considered embroidering the news, or somehow softening it. In the end, he made a hard decision to tell the truth. He stared evenly at the distressed droid, then up at the unyielding girl.
"His master's dead."
By their reaction, it was plain that neither the droid nor the girl had expected quite so blunt a response, nor one so definitive. When Ray lowered the tip of her staff, Finn continued.
His name was Poe Dameron.
He focused his attention on BB-8.
Right?
Not a single argumentative beep came from the now silent droid.
He was captured by the First Order. I helped him escape.
Finn spoke dispassionately, evenly.
Broke him out of his holding cell. Together we stole a TIE fighter. Did some damage to the Order.
He gestured at BB-8.
We couldn't flee out system, he said, because he insisted he had to find you.
A soft, almost mournful beep issued from the droid.
We got shot down. Crashed. I ejected safely. I know Poe didn't, because I found his jacket still inside the fighter. I tried to help him, but I couldn't get to him. This rotten sand sucked the ship right down. Would have taken me with it if I hadn't scrambled clear. I tried to help him. I'm sorry.
The only difference in depression between an organic and a droid is the lack of flexible expression on the part of the latter. Saddened, moving slowly, BB-8 rolled off to one side. Ray watched the little droid go, then turned her attention back to Finn. Her hostility had given way to subdued admiration.
You escaped a First Order ship and stole a TIE fighter?
Finn nodded vigorously.
A Special Forces fighter. Poe was a pilot. I handled the gunnery.
She studied him more intently.
So, you're with the Resistance?
Taking into account the way she gripped that lethal staff, and how her dark brown eyes were burning into him, it was easy enough to know how to reply. This time, he lied.
Obviously,
he told her, drawing himself up.
I'm with the Resistance. Yes, I am. I'm with the Resistance. Who else would have helped a Resistance pilot escape the First Order except another member of the Resistance? I'm surprised you have to ask.
She relaxed, leaning lightly on the staff.
Most visitors to this part of Jakku are traitors and troublemakers. I've never met a Resistance fighter before.
It was difficult to strut in place, but Finn managed it.
Well, this is what we look like. Some of us. Others look different. Now that you've met one, what's your opinion?
Ray pursed her lips.
You may be great behind the guns of a TIE fighter, but your hand-to-hand skills need a lot of work.
He slumped slightly.
I'm out of practice.
Though she thought that strange, she let it pass and gestured in the direction of the morning droid.
BB-8 says he's on a secret mission.
The droid promptly pivoted on its axis and beeped at her.
Says he needs to get back to the nearest Resistance base.
That much, at least Finn could understand.
Yeah. Apparently he's carrying a map that leads to Luke Skywalker. And everyone's insane to get their hands on it.
A frown crossed her face as she pondered this explanation. She eyed him dubiously.
Luke Skywalker? I thought he was just a myth.
Chapter 6
Finn gaped at the girl. Was she serious? It was true that Jakku was a backwater world, but still, really?
Was all he could think of to say. He might have added more, if not for the sudden interruption from a stream of excited beeps. Ray turned to the droid.
What is it?
She looked up past the now concerned Finn.
Over there?
Trailing her gaze, he was able to make out in the distance the hulking forms of the two thugs who had attacked the girl and tried to steal the droid. They were not alone. The sun gleamed off the bright white armor of two stormtroopers. One of the banged-up hooligans was pointing in Finn's direction. Grabbing Ray's hand, he started backward into the maze of tents and temporary structures that formed the marketplace.
Hey!
She protested, but allowed herself to be pulled along.
What do you think you're doing?
BB-8, come on!
Finn yelled. Unlike Ray, the droid needed no urging. A moment later,
A pair of blaster explosions obliterated the spot where they had been standing. A third struck a cleaning unit, which immediately began spewing smoke and corrosive fumes. Still holding tight to Ray's hand, Finn darted in and out among the flimsy structures, dodging outraged owners and piles of goods alike. By now, Ray was struggling with his grip.
Let go of me!
We gotta move! I know how they...
Mindful of what he had told her, he backed up and began anew.
I mean, as a resistance fighter, I'm familiar with stormtrooper procedure. I mean, the resistance have to be knowledgeable about such things.
As he ran, he nodded back the way they had come.
Those two would rather identify us from smoking bits and pieces. Saves the trouble of having to ask questions.
I'm not disputing that.
She finally managed to free her fingers from his.
I know how to run without you holding my hand.
Skidding to a stop, she gestured sharply to her left.
No, this way.
Another blast from behind just missed them.
By now, a general panic had seized the denizens of the marketplace. Those who weren't scattering in every direction were doing their best to shield their stock. Their efforts slowed, but did not halt the pursuing stormtroopers. Ray and her companions hunkered down inside a larger tent, crammed with machine parts, crates of salvage, and other mechanical detritus. Peeping cautiously through a gap in the scrap pile behind which they'd taken cover, she muttered urgently at Finn.
They're shooting at both of us. Why are they shooting at me? I haven't done anything.
Finn knew exactly why they were shooting at her, and he felt terrible about it. But there was nothing he could do. Not now.
They saw you with me. You're marked.
Her lips tightened.
Thanks for that. Marked as what?
He didn't respond directly.
I'm not the one chasing me around with a stick.
While staying hidden, he tried to scan their surroundings, searching desperately for something useful.
Anyone sell blasters around here?
A trained stormtrooper, he felt naked without a gun. Though he had been on the receiving end of the girl's staff, as far as he was concerned, it qualified as a local curiosity and not a proper weapon. Behind them, BB-8 was quivering slightly. Both antennae were fully extended and inclined slightly eastward. Ray frowned at the droid. Are you okay? While Finn's sensory equipment was less sensitive than the droid's, it was no less sophisticated. Man and machine were both listening to something that escaped the girl. Puzzled, she shifted her attention from one to the other.
What is it? What's going on? I don't hear any...
Finn shushed her with a gesture,
listening intently. She started to object, thought better of it, and went quiet. Behind him, BB-8 was growing increasingly agitated. Without a word, the droid spun and raced toward the rear of the storage area. Finn responded almost as quickly, grabbing Ray's hand and pulling her after him. As before, when she tried to pull away, he maintained his grip.
Hey, not again! Stop taking my hand!
The explosion ripped up the storage area, its contents, and the ground just behind the fleeing trio, as one of the two diving TIE fighters BB-8 and Finn had heard coming in unleashed its weaponry in a low pass over the town. The concussion threw Ray hard to the ground. She came up fearful and spitting out grit. The desert was full of dangers, and scavenging had its own risks, but she was used to those.
An occasional encounter with thieves was an occupational hazard. So was dealing on a recurring basis with the hostile and hungry creatures of the wastelands.
The realization that First Order TIE fighters might be sent to locate and eradicate a single resistance fighter suggested that she was well and truly out of her depth. This Finn must be more important than he seemed, she decided. Where was Finn, anyway? She found him nearby, unconscious. Getting a grip on his jacket, she rolled him over. The spherical white and orange droid joined her a moment later.
Should she shake him? Use her emergency bio-injector? She was no physician.
Her medical training was restricted to what she had learned during a life of having to take care of herself. The wrong application, she knew, could leave him worse off than he was now.
she was saved from having to make a decision as he came to. Blinking at his surroundings before his attention settled on her,